Okay, good afternoon. So, last time we finished up talking about bitwise operators by talking about arithmetic right shift, which I'll talk a bit about in a second, based on what happened in the post quiz. We need to go over that again. And we also talked about actually building our processor to execute instructions out of these hardware components by connecting them together. So to do that, we first talked about how these hardware components work. So we had this register file, registers in general, and memories that you're going to be supplied to build a processor. And they worked by reading effectively continuously and only updating state at the rising edge of a clock signal. And we connected these together using muxes whenever we need to make a decision, like on an add, we want to do one thing. If it's a move instruction, we want to do something else. And these muxes were the hardware component which let us encode in sort of if-then statement in hardware. And by connecting these together, we created some processors where in one clock cycle, we do all the work of one instruction. So at the rising edge, which is conceptually the end of that clock cycle, all the state updates that need to happen, all the writes to memory and registers occur for that instruction. And the computation occurs during the clock signal, clock cycle for the instruction. Okay. So first, a correction. So I said that the arithmetic right shift instruction with SRA, that is just wrong. So I was thinking of some other architecture. It's actually SAR on XC6. Why did they choose that abbreviation? Who knows? Note that we never actually intend to test you on what the shift instructions are. It's not worth memorizing them. If we give them, use them on a test, we will tell you like shift left is this instruction and so on. We don't want you to spend your time with flashcards for x86 instructions. That's not worth anyone's time in the real world. You'd look it up in the manual if you didn't remember it. But on arithmetic right shift, so we had two types of right shifts we talked about. We had the logical shift, where when we shifted over, we added zeros. And the arithmetic shift, where when we shifted over, we copied the sign bit. So in this example, on the arithmetic shift, the sign bit's one, so we copy the one. If it was zero, we'd copy a zero, and it would look the same as a logical shift. And this gives us the same results as division would give, except for rounding. So this means that in C, when we do a shift of a sign number, it does an arithmetic shift, so it looks the same as division, except that the rounding might be different. And on the question on the quiz, we asked about negative 7 being a result of the shift. So negative 56 is 8 times that. And if shifting by 3 does the same as dividing by 8, that's the result you'd expect, and that's what you'll actually get. And negative 56 is something you can put in a 2-byte 2's complement value. So any questions on arithmetic right shift? Okay, so there was also some complaints about the quiz and related things. So one thing is we had this question on the quiz about how we set up muxes. And hey, you didn't even ask, give us a good answer to that thing in class. Why did you put it on the quiz? Why are you giving yes, no answers to things that not giving yes, no answers to things which are yes, no questions. So I'll go over with hopefully more clearly what the answer to that exercise we ended class with was, which was about if we have nop and add, where are we going to have a mux or something similar, was the idea of the question. So for the register number to read, we don't need one because we can read always the same registers and just ignore the result on some of the instructions, like a nop. So we don't actually need one there. You know, it might be cleaner to specify the non-register number, but we don't need it. For the PC input, yes, we needed it because we need to do something to handle the instruction length. And the instruction length between nop and add is different because nop doesn't have register numbers and add does. For the register number or value to write, we need a mux on either one, but probably not both. And the sensible thing to do is to put a mux on the register number, so you specify none, But if you're crazy, you could decide, let's read the register and then write it down. And we didn't need one on the instruction memory address because we had this built component we assume exists, the PC register, which is outputting the value we need. It's the same value no matter what instruction it is. So we just hardwire that directly. And the logic for the question we asked on the post quiz is similar. So for jump and add an MR move queue, for the read register numbers, we didn't have any cases where we would get in trouble for reading all the registers add uses. We might not use all the values we read, but that's okay. For the PC input, we had a variable instruction length and jump, so we needed to do something there. For the register number to write, we needed to mux on that, or the value we're writing, we could read it back, write back the value we just read. But we need to do something because, for example, jump shouldn't change any of the registers. We need to make sure that that happens, even though add would. And for the write enable to memory, we didn't need a mux on that because we can just send false to that. If these are only instructions, there's no way to write to memory. Not a very useful set of instructions, but that's what we have. And for the ALU inputs, we did need something because MR move queue is doing a calculation involving something from the instruction, and add is doing a calculation with two register values. So the ALU is going to need to add different things depending on the case, so we need a mux to decide what things we give the ALU to add. Okay. Any questions on these questions about muxes? Yes.
Is there like a specific mux that's always where they're supposed to be? Like, is there just like a position you can always assume is going to be a mux?
So the question is there a position you can always assume is going to be a mux? So if you only implement one instruction, you never need any muxes. It's only because we have multiple instructions which want to do different things that we need muxes. So in a real processor, we're going to have muxes everywhere because we have 18 different instructions we implement. But if we have something which only does not, well, that doesn't need any muxes. That processor is we take a wire from the PC register, add the length of an instruction, and turn it back, and do nothing else. There's no muxes there. Okay, so there's another feedback. So the other question, which more people than even the arithmetic shift got wrong, was about timing. And some people felt it wasn't fair because if you read ahead, the next section of the textbook dealt with this very explicitly. My intention was that we told you how registers worked and registers files worked with the clock signal and showed you a picture of what the add queue processor looked like. So that was what I was hoping you would do. You would look at that picture and say, okay, there's a register here, what does it do? When does it change? There's a register file here, when does it change? That's how I wanted you to answer the question. Most people didn't do that. We'll go over this more today. Because when things actually change is a very important thing for the next bigger things we'll be doing when designing processors. And feedback from, this is not in the order I got it, just some people don't like competition sort of assignment things, and since I'm going to do this again, I should talk about it. So I know competitions make some of our students learn more. I know they make some of our students maybe a little uncomfortable, and many of our students don't care. So I like it better than extra credit because I feel like if I give a significant amount of extra credit, it's not going to really be optional. People are going to feel like they're obliged to do it for their grade. And that's not something I want to happen if I'm giving extra stuff. I want it to actually be optional. If there are better ways of doing this, you know, to make it actually feel optional to do, I could take advice on that. And yeah, but when there's competition stuff, my assumption is that a lot of people could do it and aren't because they don't have time or don't care. And that's fine. And that should feel fine. Okay, another anonymous feedback. You should drop any question that most students don't get right on the quizzes, because you know the point of the quiz is not to, is that should just be review. While this might be a nice idea in practice, if you think about what happens if you cooperate with each other, it creates some bad incentives. So I'm not going to do it. some feedback that I should check my slides more carefully, and yes, I should. I'm amazed at what I cannot see going through my slides before lecture. I will always try to do better. Okay, so moving on from the quiz, we have a homework due tomorrow. Hopefully you've started it. I would recommend starting it if you haven't because, you know, it deals with malloc, and I would not recommend figuring out segfaults at 10 a.m. before it's due at noon. Maybe you feel differently, but it seems like a bad idea to me. So after that homework, we have a lab and homework this week, which is bit fiddling problems. So it's going to be in C, but you'll be only allowed to use a very small subset of things in C. The subset will be very different for each problem. And we're going to use a set of problems in the lab. And it's complete what you can. There's some minimum threshold you need to do to get credit, but it's very low. And you can work together. And they have uneven difficulty. So the last problem there is actually very hard, and we don't expect anyone to do it. Some of them should be very easy. There's a follow-up homework, which has different problems with the same interface, same style of problems, but more even difficulty. We expect you to do all of them, and there's not one which is incredibly difficult. Yes?
The interface you use for the homework and also for the quiz, is there any way to actually make it print things out that you put it print statements in your own code?
For this assignment, there is not. However, you should be able to copy and paste from the interface we give you into a text file and compile it with your C compiler and run it. And that's what we would recommend. We don't want to print things out, partly because we don't want you to know what all our test cases are, and partly because we just haven't implemented that. Okay, so that's my review of homework things. Oh, so one note on this homework. So the homework is due a week from tomorrow. Those of you who have looked at the schedule carefully may note that that's the day before an exam. I am aware of this. So I would note that next week we don't have reading quizzes. We have one at the end of this week, none next week. We also have, in place of lab next week, review, and most of Tuesday's lecture, maybe all of it, depending how far we get, will also be review. So my assumption is you can find time to do the homework and study for the exam given this. So, just letting you know, because I anticipate that I will get complaints about this. And maybe you don't want to do the homework at the last minute if you also care about studying for exams. Yeah?
Do you have any advice for us for preparing for the exam?
So, advice for question is there advice for preparing for the exam? So, I have posted on the website under the documents link at the top, exams from the past several semesters. Those will give you an idea of the sort of questions we ask, though the topics have changed slightly in this course over time. For example, we used to cover floating point, we don't anymore. But most of that will be pretty obvious when you look at the question, we've never touched this, no, we're not going to ask about that. So that would be good practice. The types of questions I ask on the post-quiz are similar to what I might ask on the exam, though maybe of different difficulty. And maybe they'll be proofread more carefully for the exam to be really careful that I don't have to drop questions on the exam. So that'd be where I'd start.
Okay.
Yes?
One of the questions on the first exam from the previous semester said that one of the attributes of a CRISP instruction set architecture is that it uses less power.
So we didn't talk about that. For questions on things that are on the exam, let's try to postpone that until next week when my plan is to spend like maybe not more than 30 minutes covering whatever we don't get to on Thursday, and then the rest of the time on exam review. Yes?
Should we focus more on the lectures or the book?
The question is, should you focus more on the lectures or the book? So there's some material which is kind of scattered in the book for this first part, like the stuff on C, for which you should look at the lectures. For the material like I'm talking about now, it's a very important topic on the exam, and we should be roughly in sync for that. And you can look at either and should get basically the same information in different ways. Other questions? Logistics, yes. The exam will be in a similar format to the ones you can find posted, which is either multiple choice or like one-word answer. Like, one word might be like a number. We intend to grade the exam quickly and not have to, like, think hard about what you wrote. Yes?
Are the exams curved?
The question is, are the exams curved? So I'm following Luther Chikanovich's practice when he taught this class, which is that I will come up with a rubric for the exam, meaning I will look through the exam and decide how many questions I think a C student should get right, and I will make that be approximately a 75%. But I will not be curving it based on how you do relative to other students. And usually when I look through the exam I wrote and I decide how many C gets, that will like move like a grade that's like a 60% raw score to like a 75. But it depends what the exam I write is, and like how many select multiple questions there are and things like that. Okay, so last time we were looking at constructing sort of processors that would run a small subset of our YID6 instructions. Like we made a processor that would only run knops and jumps. Not very useful, but will tell us the concepts we'll need to know for making real processors. So I'm going to start with a more complicated example of more useful instructions than just knop and jump, namely all these instructions that move a value from somewhere to a register. We're going to try to construct a CPU to do that. So I have the components we're going to need. So we need the PC, the instruction memory, a register file, and the data memory. And I've also listed the encodings in the instructions so I can refer to them and know what's going on. And I'll just start by adding what I need to add in order for this to run RRMoveQ. So we have the first step here. Whenever we run an instruction, is we want to read the instruction from memory. So that's going to be the first thing we do. We take our PC, which contains the address of the instruction we're running, we send that to the instruction memory, and we get out some values, and we're going to split that up into the pieces of the instruction. For RRMoveQ, we have RA and RB. And the next thing we might do is we might want to read some of those values, so I'm just going to pass those to the register file. And my observation is, well, I'm going to need to read source A here, read RA, which I'm going to set to be source A's input, which means that when I send that to this register file out here, I get the value of RA, of that register. I'm also going to read source B just to put something there, but I'm not actually using that yet. You may note that we need to write to a register, but we don't need to read to a second register for RRMoveQ. We read from RA, write to RB. And since we write to RB, I have DestD here, which corresponds to one of the inputs to the register file that will make us write. I have it set to be equal to RB by connecting it to part of the output of the instruction memory, so we write to the appropriate register, whatever RB is in the instruction we just read. And the next step I need to do is I know I'm going to be reading out the value of RA here, and I want to input it as the next value of the destination register, for which the input is here. So I just need to connect those two. And now I have something which runs RRMoveQ, except I might be missing a few steps with respect to the PC. So I run RRMoveQ, so I read from, I send source A, RA to source A here, read from it, send it to its destination, which I specify goes in RB through the DestD signal. So this is what RRMoveQ does. Any questions on this so far? Yeah. So why is there an arrow to source B? Because I'm anticipating what I'm going to do in the future. But in fact, we don't need that. So I'm uselessly reading RB and not using its value, so I didn't need to read it. But we'll use that later, and I just drew it now in anticipation of that. But there's actually no reason to do that. Even though you might think I have two register numbers, two read ports, I should use them both. So next we have a second instruction here, which is, you know, other instructions here, like IRemoveQ, which is going to write a different value to the register. So since we know we want to write a different value, we need to give the register file a different input. And if we want to give it a different input, but only sometimes, we have our tool to do that, tool to make decisions in hardware, do an if-then in hardware, and that's a mux. So since we know we need to write a different value, we're going to have a mux in front of this register number to write input. And one of the inputs to that mux is going to be what we do for our remove queue. And we know since these instructions write different things, they're going to have other inputs to that mux. And we're going to work on adding them one at a time. And because we have a mux here, we need to have some logic which decides which input from the mux we choose, which is going to be based on the opcode, which is the 2, 3, or 5 in these instructions. So our next instruction is IRemoveQ. So it takes a constant, which I've labeled V, which is part of the output of the instruction memory, and that's what we write. Otherwise, it's the same as RRemoveQ. So I just take that constant, it's another input to the mux, we choose it when this part of the output of the instruction memory is 3, and then we send it through this mux into the register file and write that value to RB. Okay, any questions? Before we go on to the hard one of these, which is the one which touches memory. So this instruction which touches memory, if you read this carefully, it does some weird things that are subtle and often missed. So one of them is that that's RA. That's not RB. That is deliberate. We will see why that is a bit later. But that is what the encoding our textbook authors chose, is that that's RA, not RB. Which means that the register number we're writing for these two instructions is not the one we actually want to write for MRMoveQ. So we need to supply a different input as the register number to write. So that's going to be one of our steps here. So we're going to add a mux here, and we're going to supply an input of either RA or RB, depending on whether it's an MRMoveQ instruction. We also need, of course, to supply the value for memory that we're actually reading. So for that, we need to add RB and the immediate, which I called V for IRemoveQ and called D for this, but it's the same part of the instruction, so it's the same wire we can use for both. So we add those together with our ALU, and send that to the address input to our data memory. And we know that in the same clock cycle, it's going to output the value at that address. It outputs that value, it goes into our last input to the mux, which hopefully we've selected to go through when we're running an MRMoveQ instruction. And that will end up being written into RA. Any questions about what I added here besides the obvious, why are we writing to RA instead of RB? Yeah, why did we choose that encoding question, which I'll get to in a second. Yeah. Or no?
Why are you writing to the ALU?
Why do we use the ALU? So what this instruction does is it's the register RA gets the value in memory at D plus whatever's in RB. The ALU is doing that calculation, the D plus the value of register RB. And the way I've set it up, it always does the calculation, we just sometimes don't care about what happens to the result. Any other questions? Yeah?
The
ALU unclocked?
So the ALU, the question is unclocked? So the ALU, it computes the result in the same clock cycle. It doesn't care about what the clock signal is doing. Other questions? So if not, we'll go on and add one more instruction to this, which is the remaining move instruction, the register to memory move. So what do we need to do? So here's where we're starting. What do we need to add in order to add this register to memory move instruction? What things are we missing? It's one thing, yes.
You need a data input?
You need a data input?
You need a memory block, a place to actually store it
into memory. We need a place to store it, put it into memory. So we have the component we're going to use for that, which is this, but we are missing things around it. So what you say we need a place to store it?
Right.
Yeah, so this is the component which does that, but we are missing a value on the input that we want. So we need to somehow set up this data in here to, this needs to come from something. So what's the value we're writing? It's actually the value in RA. So that's going to end up coming off of RA. Anything else we need? So we need to say you need a mux to say which one to accept. Which one of what?
Where you have the new red line.
Okay. So we don't always want to write. So does anyone remember how I told you our data memory decides whether or not to write? Okay. Yeah.
Is it that it's like memory write is up to one?
Yeah, so we have, so that was in the reading for this week. So we have an input, which is write enabled or is read enabled. So we need to set that input. So there's going to be a write enable input, which is going to have to come probably from this convert, use the opcode to figure that out. Are we writing to memory in this instruction or not? If we don't do that, we're going to write to memory on a register to register move, and that's not something we want to do. Anything else we're missing? So this is another case of like writing to memory. We're doing something extra that we actually shouldn't be doing on this instruction with the current picture. Yeah.
What is the point of the increment, the block there?
Oh, what's the point of the increment? So the question is about, I assume, this block?
No, that makes sense. I'm talking about the increment in front of that block. Plus.
This, okay.
That's the ALU.
That's the ALU, and in this case, all it does is add things to produce an address. Yeah. Sure, the increment for the PC. So this increment block, what does it do? So we're sometimes adding 2, sometimes adding 10, and passing that value back to the PC. Why do we sometimes need to add 2 or 10? Any volunteers? Flame, way back there?
Because of the variable instruction length.
So R move Q, 2 bytes. We want to add 2 to find the next instruction. All the other things, 10 bytes. We want to add 10 to find the next instruction. That's the logic which does it. We have a mux inside. You know, whether we're in the R move Q case or the other case. Okay, so there's one thing that we need that this does wrong for the instructions.
Is it writing to a register every time?
Yeah, so with this wired the way it is, DestD either has RA or RB on it. So we're writing to RA or RB, and we're writing a value which either came from memory or from the instruction or from a register file, that is not something MRMoveQ does. So we need to prevent MRMoveQ from writing to a register, RMMoveQ from writing to a register, since we write to memory, not a register. And the easiest way of doing that is inputting the special register number we have for no register, making that an option on our MUX. So we just have one of the inputs to the MUX. It's not wired to the instruction memory, it's just wired to something which says 15 all the time. And yes, also the other components. Okay. So any questions on anything in this picture? Yes.
Sorry, I'm still a little confused with the plus 2, plus 10. It's like a variable.
So okay, so you're asking about the plus 2, plus 10. So for RRMoveQ, this is where the next instruction starts. For IRMoveQ, this is where the next instruction starts. So if this is PC, this is PC plus 2, and this is PC plus 10. So it's choosing between those two to get that the location where the next instruction should start. Okay, any other questions on anything on this picture? Yeah.
So you said for the, since we don't want RMoveQ right to register, we just have a value like RMoveQ, which means it's not right.
Yes, and that's just, so yeah, the question for RMoveQ, we don't want to write, so you send 15, which we've just declared when we designed our register file means don't write. That was just a decision we made. Any other questions, points of confusion? Okay. So if you've seen this picture, this looks rather like how our textbook describes things. So I'm going to try to start relating this to what our textbook does. So our textbook, you know, this is a clean picture of this processor that only does moves. So, you know, kind of useful. Can't actually do any real computation, but. And our textbook divides it into what they call stages. And I've just drawn boxes over the areas which correspond to each of the stages our textbook names. You may think, this is kind of weird. Why do we decide on these boxes? And there's a reason for it, and it has to do with what we'll do after the exam. It's why the textbook chose this particular division. This is probably not how you divide it up if your main goal was actually just to split this up into similar parts. So we have our fetch stage. Fetch, decode, then execute, memory, write back, and PC update. And this is a conceptual division of the instruction. So it's not going to say that we do fetch first, then decode, then write back, then decode, then execute the memory, then write back, because that's not how those wires work. So this is a division of the instruction to help us think about designing our processor. So the idea that the textbook authors have is that you'll just think about the stuff that goes into the code or the write-back box and figure that out for every instruction. And while you're doing that, you don't need to think about what's going on everywhere else in the processor. That's the hope, at least. So our textbook has descriptions of these phases. So the fetch phase, we read the instruction memory. That's why the box contains the instruction memory itself. We split up the instruction into pieces. So we find the part of it which is the register number, the part which is a constant that we're going to add or jump to. And we also compute the instruction length and find the address of the following instruction in memory. You might say, a lot of these things don't sound like fetching, and you're right. It's probably not the name they should have used. In the decode stage, that's when we read from the register file. So whatever registers we need to read, that doesn't really sound like decoding. That's the name our textbook uses. I'm sorry. I probably have not called it that. The execute stage is where the arithmetic happens. So anything that uses the ALU happens in the execute stage. And when we're designing the execute stage, that's where we make all our decisions about what are the inputs to the ALU is going to be made there. And we might need to do different things for different instructions. We have the memory stage. This is at least straightforward. This is where we access the data memory, either read or write it. When we're designing it, we decide what exactly is the write enable input, what exactly is the address input, etc. Note that this is only the data memory, not the instruction memory. That's in the fetch phase. We have the write back stage. It's where we write to the register file. So I included in the box for that both deciding what value to write and what register to write to. That's conceptually part of the write back stage. And we have this thing called PC update, where we compute the next value of the PC. Note that the way our textbook designs things, we actually compute the address of the next instruction in the fetch phase. In the PC update phase, we decide, are we going to use that, or are we going to use an address we're jumping to, or something else? So that's where PC update is, where we make that decision. Do we go on to the next instruction, or do we go on to jump off somewhere, or call some function, or return? So any questions about sort of our textbook's idea about what each of these stages are? Yes?
Sometimes some instructions won't even go to some of these stages.
So the question is, sometimes some of these instructions won't do some of these stages. So some of these instructions will have no work to do in some of these stages, but that doesn't mean the hardware won't exist in our processor that's doing something during those stages. So for example, many of our move instructions don't do anything during the execute stage. That doesn't mean our ALU doesn't exist in the processor and isn't doing something during the execute stage. We just aren't using the results. Like there's wires into the ALU, it's doing some calculation, it's just that the result isn't going anywhere. And that's generally going to be happen in a lot of these stages. So instructions that don't access memory, there's wires going into the data memory, it's just not doing anything interesting. But there's an address on the address line that we just aren't using. Any other questions about these stages? Okay, so since we've talked about these stages, and this is the conceptual way we divide the instructions, let's start with a question on timing. So I've listed what the stages are above, and recalling our discussion of how registers work, how registers files work, how memory works, and the pictures we've drawn for what a processor that executes each of these instructions would look like as far as what's connected to what. Think about when these things happen for this, when these operations happen for push QRAX, is instruction read, so actually reading the push instruction, changing memory, so push writes to the data memory, changing RSP because it decrements the stack pointer, and changing the program counter so we can execute the instruction that's after push. So think about the answer, compare with your neighbors, see if you agree, and we'll check back in a couple minutes. Thank you. Okay, who has an answer to this? Who doesn't have an answer? Okay, so it looks like a majority have an answer or aren't willing to tell me they don't. So who thinks it's probably one? Or A, sorry. Probably A. Probably B. Probably C. Probably D. Probably E. Okay. Probably F. Okay, so we have absolutely no agreement. So does anyone want to defend their answer? No, okay. So this is kind of a trick question. So I'm telling you all about these stages up here. And they are completely irrelevant. And the reason is, if we go to this picture here, the stages don't actually change where the wiring is. Like, the components are going to do what they're going to do regardless of how we name the parts. And even though that might be the conceptual order things happen in, that's not where the wires go. And that's what actually, the wires and how these components work is what actually determines what happens. And if you remember when we discussed how each of these components worked, our instruction memory, it takes in an address and outputs a value in the same clock cycle. Our data memory, when we're writing, it takes in an address and a value, and it waits until the rising edge of the clock to actually do anything. Like, the values are on its inputs, but memory doesn't change until the rising edge of the clock. If you remember our register file, it takes in a register number and a value, and the value doesn't change until the rising edge of the clock. If you remember our PC register, it takes in a value, and it doesn't change the value it's outputting, the value it has stored, until the rising edge of the clock. So basically, what happens during this instruction, and this is the general pattern we're going to have, is that somewhere in here, we do read anything. So we read the instruction memory, and we do actual computation in here. And at the signal of this rising edge of the clock, we change state, meaning this is where write happen. So the best answer here would be B. So we're dividing our processor up into these stages at this point just to help us think about how we design the processor in smaller pieces. Because when I showed you that picture of the whole thing and said, what's wrong with this for RM move Q, you're not going to be able to figure that out. No. And thinking of it in stages like this, where you like look at a smaller set of components, that should help you actually figure those components out. But does it help you figure out the order things happen? No. The way you know how things happen is you think of how these components actually work. Yes?
So everything happens in one clock cycle, and then...
So with our designs, we're designing processors which execute exactly one instruction per clock cycle.
The book Philip was saying that it would take, like, the SCQ way of designing things is very, like, inefficient because the clock cycle takes too long.
Yeah, so the question is, our book said this is very inefficient, but hey, everything takes one clock cycle, so does that mean the clock cycle takes too long? Yes. So after the exam, we'll talk about another design technique, and when we compare that to SCQ, we'll talk about clock cycle end. It turns out that this single cycle design is very inefficient. Even though we're doing everything in one cycle, that cycle is going to be very, very long. And we can do a lot better than that and get a lot better performance, even though instructions will take more clock cycles to run. So a subtlety I note here, which often confuses people on this question, is that we have RSP here. And we're writing to RSP minus 8. That's the address we're writing to. That's the address we want to pass to the data memory. But the data memory and the actual value stored in RSP are going to change at the same time. So how do we pass that address to the data memory? Where does it come from? If it's not the actual value in the register file.
Sorry, what was the question?
So we're writing to RSP minus 8. So the value on, so we had our data memory here. And the value on this input, this is RSP minus 8. The initial RSP minus 8. So how does that happen if we can't change RSP right away? Where does that, must that come from? The ALU would be the logic, or something else which does a compute and a subtraction. So even though when you're writing down what happens in the push instruction, you'd say, first I change RSP, then I use that to access memory. This can't be how we implement it in this processor design. We have to, since we're doing everything in one cycle, we can't change something and then read that value we just changed. We need to compute the new value and send it everywhere we need it. And that's what we're going to do to access memory for a push. Okay, so that's about timing. So with that caveat about our division of the stage out of the way, let's talk about reading our book's listing of what the instructions do. So our book has some funny notation, but this corresponds pretty much one-to-one to the pictures I've drawn of sort of processors that execute some subset of these instructions. So for NOP, we have this funny notation here. We have M for memory, with a subscript of 1, meaning 1 byte from memory, at PC. This represents part of the output of the instruction memory. And it's saying that we take part of the output of the instruction memory, divide it into pieces, and give a name to some of the wires that it's going on. So we're just calling a wire that part of a wire that comes out of the instruction memory, iCode, and part of it, iFun. That's what this line of text that you see in the book is telling us. That the instruction memory has an output, and we're calling part of that output iCode iFun. We also have this thing which looks like an assignment to PC. Since we know the PC register doesn't actually change in the middle of the instruction, what an assignment like this means is that we set the input to the PC register equal to the wire we called valp earlier. So the wire called LP is connected to the input to the PVC register, and when the clock, the rising edge of the clock happens, that will cause the value to change. This is just representing what the input to the PC register is. And we can see that we can get this sort of listing for multiple instructions. And one way you can go about constructing the pictures I showed you earlier, that's maybe more reliable than looking at it and saying, what are we missing here? What does this do wrong? Is you can go step by step and see where there's conflicts. So for example here, we have two different things we want to set as the input to the PC register. For NOP, we're setting the wire we've called valp. or jump, we're setting the wire, we call val c. We can't do both of these at the same time, so that means there must be a mux to decide which one we're doing. And you can use this logic and go through these listings of instructions systematically and figure out where do we need muxes everywhere for each stage, and what are their inputs, and when do we set them based on the instruction. So if we take our old jump plus nop CPU I showed you last week, we can just relabel some of these wires and it looks like what we're doing in the textbook. I didn't use the textbook name because I don't like most of them, but I will try to use them sometimes so you can look at the lecture slides in the textbook and maybe they'll correspond, especially when we're talking about stages. So the textbook just has some funny names for the wires, but that's all they are. You may note that this box here that we had to decide what the input to the mux is didn't appear anywhere in our textbook's listing of what the instruction does. So our textbook generally is going to omit that and leave it as sort of implied that you have extra stuff you've added to decide what to do for which instruction, that they're just not writing anything down about. So our instruction listings also have some more complicated cases. So this is RMOVEQ and MRMOVEQ, which notably form the same calculation here. And we have CR notation for some other things we do that correspond to our built-in components. So we have reading from a register. So that's represented with R of R as an array that represents our register file. And we're reading from it, that means we set, in this case, RA equal to the source A input. And we set name the output corresponding to that val A. That's what this line is telling you to do. Here, for MRMOVEQ, we have nothing corresponding to reading RA. That means either we can say explicitly re-register 15, or we just don't care because we're not using the results. We can do whatever we want, there's no conflict. We also have something representing accessing the data memory. So here, the M means memory, it looks like we write it like it's an array. The subscript of 8 means we're writing 8 bytes, or reading 8 bytes. And here, this is saying that if we have a data memory, set the address input to val E, because that's where we're writing. Set the value input to val A, and enable write. That's what that line tells us we need to do for this instruction. And similarly, we have the opposite, where we're reading from memory, where we say, set the address wires to val E, and name the output of the memory that's going to be the value we're reading at that address, val n. We also have register writing. So something like this means set the write register number to RA and also connect the thing we call val m to the corresponding input. So any questions on any of the operations in this instruction listing here, and how they correspond to the pictures we've drawn? Yeah?
Yeah, under the execute stage, you basically perform an ask, what it's doing is zeroing out one of them and then adding the other.
So the question is, in the execute stage here, we're performing an add. What does this mean?
Right.
So this means we have our ALU, and one of the inputs is val B, and the other input is val C, and we're calling the output val E, and we're also telling the ALU to select add.
Right, but in this instance, since it's a move, val C is zero, right? I mean, you're moving one and the other.
Yes, so, no. So this is a move. So the question is, what's the calculation actually represent? So the calculation, in both cases, val E becomes the address we're accessing in memory. So we're not adding zero, we're actually computing an address, which is, in both cases, a displacement plus the value of register B. This, by the way, is why MR move Q uses RA as the destination. This is so we do the same address calculation for both types of memory moves. Which is arguably simpler. So any other questions on anything on this picture? Okay, so like I said earlier, not shown on this picture is all the logic that's gonna control the muxes related to whether we do think, whether we, you know, select a particular input. That's just not written on this diagram. And so we can remember we had that here. So we have our names, the names of the inputs, just for reference. So all the I just didn't name the wires or book does. But you can figure out the names. Val A is the output of the register file, just the name they used for it. And we have these extra wires here, which are the things which control the muxes, which just aren't written down. You need to figure them out based on comparing the instructions. So there's a general name for what these are. And those red wires here are called the control path, because they control what choices we make. And the other wires are called the data path, because that's where the actual information we're processing goes. The values that are in registers and part of the program. So you'll commonly see this distinction referred to. We'll talk about the control path versus the data path of our processor. So data path signals which carry actual data, and the control path are signals that control things like muxes, so we know what to do for what instruction. There's a fuzzy line here. So for example, are condition codes part of the control path? Depends who you ask. So there's not a definite distinction, but often we will omit things that we consider part of the control path to make it simpler to talk about our processor, and because where the data goes is the important thing. And you can figure out from the description of the instruction how the control path is supposed to work once you know what the data path looks like. So, any questions on data path or control path, or before we move on into looking at the stages in a bit more depth? Okay. So I talked about reading the stage diagram. So let's talk about the looking at each stage and figuring out what the circuitry that corresponds to it's going to be. So our instruction fetch in general, this is read the instruction memory, split it up, and we have these are the wire names our book uses. We have iCode and iFun for the first byte of the instruction, which tells us what type of instruction is it, what type of conditional jump is it, etc. We have RA and RB, which are our register numbers, that if we have register numbers, they're in the second byte of the instruction. And we have Val C. This is what our textbook uses for either the target of a call or a jump, or the displacement for a memory address calculation, or a constant for a move. And one piece of work that our textbook does in fetch is computes val, what they call val p, which is the address of the following instruction. So the logic we have there, you can draw it out like this. We take part of the instruction, compute the instruction length, find the address of the next instruction, which we might pass to the PC, we might not. We don't know yet. That's a future stage. We could find val C, the part of the instruction which deals with the constants in the instruction, and we also extract the two register numbers, which I've drawn close to source A and source B, because most likely if we get register numbers, we might want to read them. So any questions on what we have so far? Okay. So our next stage our textbook talks about is reading the registers. and they give a name to the values we read, and they call the value we read from the first port to the register file val A, and the value we read from the second port val B. That's just the name they use. The convention, if you haven't caught on, is that things that start with a val are 64 bits. That's why they're doing that. Is that a good convention? Probably not. When we have you design a processor, we're going to be using something that's more flexible than that, so you don't need to use the textbook names if you think they're bad. So the most straightforward thing is that you want to read values from the register file. We just need to hook up our register numbers to the register file, and now we have our values. Now here, this should be val A, and this should be val B. So this doesn't actually, this is not actually the right thing to do for some of these instructions. So as an exercise, look through all these instructions and tell me which ones of these did I already not do something right for, even though I'm omitting, haven't done a lot of this circuit. One of these can I definitely not implement, given what I just did, without changing one of the wires I already drew. Yes. What? So, oh, sorry, this is, decide amongst yourselves which of these all of them we can't do. There's might be more than one might be correct, and compare with your neighbor to see if you agree on the set. And one systematic way of going about this is figure out what you would need to write in the decode part of the description for these instructions, the way our textbook does it. Who has an answer for all of these? Who knows which ones they think are not possible? Who has no idea how to proceed? Okay. So, the way I would go about this, say, what registers does not read? None. Okay. So, is it a problem to read whatever is an RA, or the second byte of the NOP instruction? Is the question. So it turns out it isn't, because reading registers doesn't do anything if we don't use their values. So there's not actually a problem with NOP. We're reading extra registers that we don't care about, but that's not actually dangerous. So ADQ, what registers does ADQ read? Any volunteers? Yeah. RA and RB. So this is RA, RB, and we're reading RA, we're reading RB, so it looks fine so far. We're reading both the registers we need to read, and since we don't have any other read inputs to the register file, if we're not reading the registers we need to read now, we can't do it. How about MRMoveQ? What registers do we need to read for that? So this is the tricky one. It's the encoding is MRMoveQ from DRB to RA. So we need to read from RB. And yep, we were reading from RB, we're fine. How about POP? What registers does POP need to read from? So what is, anyone want to tell me what POP does? Describe just what the instruction does. Like if you had to implement it, yeah.
Well, it first increments the stack pointer and then it pushes or pops the value off from that.
Okay, so it increments the stack pointer. In order to increment the stack pointer, we probably want to read the stack pointer. So POP better read RSP. And if we refer to the encoding of POP, we will find out that the register number for RSP does not appear anywhere in the instruction. Certainly not where RA and RB are. So that needs to come from somewhere else. How about call? What is, can anyone just describe to me what does call do? Call instruction. In terms that are more specific than it calls a function. Yeah, back there.
I think it puts the address of what the register is, like the register should be, and it just jumps to what the thing is calling.
Okay, so you have two parts. So it puts the address of the next instruction somewhere and jumps to the location you specify. So where is that somewhere it puts? Any
memory?
Any particular place in memory? Yeah.
The stack.
So it puts it on the stack. If we need to know where the stack is in memory, where do we find that out? RSP. So call also needs to, at some point, better read RSP. So it turns out that we can't do POP or call with what I've drawn. Because we some point need to read RSP, so we know the address of the stack. And the RSP does not appear anywhere in these instructions, the register number for it. So it's not an RA or RB. Yeah. So we can do not. So the question is, where have I already made a mistake, not where am I missing wires? To be clear, like I can draw extra wires to make not work. I can't draw extra wires to make POP work, unless I cross out wires I already drew.
So where does RSP go in this diagram?
So where does RSP go on this diagram? So basically, what we're going to do is we're going to put a mux in front of either source A or source B. And a way you can figure this out systematically is you can just say, what registers do we read, figure out the prop values, and figure out what the mux needs to be. Just do it for everything in the instruction set instead of just a few like the examples we've had so far. You can figure out that, wait, we don't really need to do the non-register number, but we definitely need RSP. And that's how you're going to figure that out. And and when you get that, you get something more like this. Okay, so any questions on this? Okay, so remember, their homework due tomorrow, bit fiddling lab tomorrow, and homework due next week. I will finish up going through all the stages next time and talk about also our environment for developing a processor simulator, and maybe finish up next week and then do review for the exam next week.